This is Dave Glowatz. On the phone with me is Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader. You ready to throw it down, Ben?
Go, baby.
Today we're talking about your column titled, Who Will Keep Your Rent Down Now?, which appeared in the Reader on January 14th, 2010. Your article compares the positions of three candidates for the Democratic nomination for Cook County Assessor. And that's for the February 2nd primary election. The winner of that election goes on to run in the general election in November for county assessor. You also talk about the fact that the existing county assessor, James Houlihan, is not running again, which is why he's not in the primary.
That's correct, Senator.
First of all, let's talk about the assessor's job. You talk a lot in the article about the factors in calculating property taxes with respect to the government's levy, the tax rate, and the value of property. As I understand it, the assessor's job is to pretty much establish the property value part of that equation for property tax purposes. So with respect to that, you talk about the existing assessor, Houlihan, who is not going to be around much longer. And you talk about that in context of the fact that the homeowner's exemption, which helps homeowners to have lower property taxes, that exemption is going to go from $20,000 to $6,000 this year.
Yes.
You said that Houlihan retiring means that there's no powerful politician to force House Speaker Michael Madigan or Mayor Richard Daley to support raising it back
right.
to a higher exemption. How does Houlihan, who is, you know, sort of the gatekeeper of property values for taxing purposes, how does he have that power?
The short answer is that he seized the power. He took that initiative on himself. And here's what happened. I want to say it was around 2003 or so. Houlihan, who was just finishing his first term in office, starting his second, came to the conclusion that home properties were rising at a faster rate than commercial or non-home properties.
The value was rising.
Yes, the value is rising. So as a result, homeowners were paying too great a portion of the property tax burden. He concocted a device to protect homeowners. Basically, what he did was he gave them an exemption, shielding them from excessive property taxes. By doing that, he did not cut the amount of money that government spent. He merely shifted the burden from homeowners to non-homeowners.
He did that unilaterally without...
What he did was he sort of forced the governor and the leader of the Senate and the House to sign on to it. He made his proposal. He went around and he picked up support throughout the city from property tax payer groups. And then he won support of local politicians. And he took his campaign to Springfield and forced a very reluctant Mike Madigan to sign on to that deal, raising the exemption. That was a three-year raise that expired, I believe, in 2006, and we went through the same ritual again, where Houlihan used his bully pulpit and his prominence as a public figure to once again lead a crusade in Springfield to extend the homeowner's exemption.
So why couldn't his successor do that?
Two things. One, there will be no successor in office in September when the homeowner exemption expires. Houlihan will be a lame duck assessor, and he won't have nearly the prominence or power that he has now. In addition, Houlihan himself has indicated that he does not want to be the leader of this charge, or at least that's what he's saying now. He feels it should be left to other people, and he's getting out of public life. So there's going to be a void. It's not an issue championed by Mayor Daley. It's not an issue championed by Michael Madigan, who are two of the most prominent politicians in the state. So if it's going to happen, somebody new is going to have to emerge as the leader of this movement.
We were talking about the property tax value part of the equation. Let's talk about the government levy part of the equation. Something that you didn't mention is that the levy is affected by the amount of tax dollars siphoned off to tax increment financing districts. So I'll bring that up. Also bring up the idea, which we've talked about many times before, that because of that, siphoning off taxing money that would normally go to all the various taxing bodies like municipalities, Cook County, the Board of Education, Park District, to compensate for the funds that are siphoned off by tax increment financing, the various taxing bodies have to raise their tax rate.
Yeah, what they do is their rate is higher than it has to be in order to produce the levy they need to operate. And the additional money that that higher rate brings in, they turn over to the city. That's effectively how money is raised through the TIF program. They shoulder the taxpayer with the additional burden of bringing in money for the TIFs. That's pretty much how it works. It's a tax hike.
Which leads me to an interview that aired this morning on WBEZ Radio with a guy by the name of Michael Jasso of the Chicago Department of Community Development. He introduced a justification for tax increment financing that I hadn't heard before. Let's hear what he had to say.
What basically it allows jurisdictions to do is to take a look at an area and say, hey, you know, this area has not been generating as much tax as it could because there's been underinvestment in the area, various other things. And so, in fact, that area tends to be more of a drain on the overall jurisdiction's taxes.
So he seems to say that the development funded by tax increment financing will help an area stop being a drain on other tax revenues. What do you think of that argument?
I don't buy the drain argument. I mean, the notion that you can use TIFs to spark development in underdeveloped areas, I buy. I don't buy the drain argument. In fact, I could just as easily argue that TIF districts are themselves a drain, that the most obvious case is Block 37, where we had a perfectly functioning city block that was producing tax dollars, and what the city and its with its TIF program did, they spent property tax dollars buying up all the property, then they spent property tax dollars tearing down the property, then they spent more property tax dollars buying back the property from the developers that they had sold it to, then they spent even more property tax dollars redeveloping it. So the net result is for over 20 years, we've been getting no property taxes from an area that used to contribute, I forget how many, but tens of millions of dollars in property taxes.
But that's not really representative of other TIF districts.
Well, I got to tell you, it is representative of other TIF districts. I could point to you TIF districts throughout the city where in the name of development, they've actually created blights. Another great example is the one in Jefferson Park at the corner of Lawrence and Milwaukee.
In fact, we talked about that one.
The whole block has been decimated. It's bringing in less tax revenue. Another one of my favorite ones is in Rogers Park, Loyola, right across the street from Loyola University. It used to be that photo studio, I forget the name of it. It was producing tax revenue, and they tore that down. And I'm not sure if it's been developed yet. It's probably still undeveloped, but they're going to turn it into some kind of building for Loyola University, which won't pay any property taxes. There's cases in Bridgeport where TIF deals didn't come through, and so you have blight. There's cases in Roseland where TIF deals didn't come through, so you have more blight than you had before. There's cases in Englewood. By and large, it's not that easy to put one of these deals together. In fact, I could argue that the subsidy, the city's intrusion into the marketplace, is an impediment because, if nothing else, it tends to get developers greedy and they want more money, so they claim they need more money than they actually need. There's never been any kind of citywide, independent, objective analysis of how the TIF program has worked. For every success story the city can cite, I can cite my own example of economic blight caused by the very TIF program. So
perhaps that radio show this morning would have been more interesting as a debate.
Well, you know, I mean, it's funny you should say that. What show was that?
848.
Yeah, at one point, one of their producers said, oh, would you like to come on and talk to somebody from the city? And I said, yeah, sure. Half the people in the city I think I've educated on the TIF program. Definitely the Board of Education didn't know anything about it until I started explaining to them. So I said, yeah, I'll go on with them. And then the radio producer came back to me and said, well, essentially, they won't go on with you. So
we're providing that forum here today for our listeners.
I can play both roles. I'll be Ben, and then I'll be the city. Because I know every argument they ever say. I probably could do a better job of saying it than they could. But anyway, I got a big kick out of it. I got to tell you, Dave, you know, everybody was calling me up or sending me emails. You got to call. You got to weigh in. This guy is getting away with murder.
Yeah, too bad you don't Twitter.
I think this is an important point to make. Anybody who believes what city officials tell them when it comes to economic development and property tax dollars is a fool. And we'll just leave it at that.
Well, I think that's a good place to stop. Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Dave.
This is Dave Gloetz. You've been listening to the rest of the story. When you get a chance, check back at MrRadio.org for further installments or subscribe to our podcast. Thanks for listening.